Hi, everybody. My name is Merv Lingle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 1st, 2001. My home group is the Common Solution Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Thursday nights at the Hinton Avenue Methodist Church at 7:30. Most of you people have been there visiting, or a few of you have come down and spoke, so we definitely appreciate that. I'm here to tell you that if you weren't at yesterday's event, you missed one heck of a good event. I'm going to tell you what. I was talking to a couple of people before the meeting, like, it was powerful stuff. And I'll tell you, the great thing is the way I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous was sometimes you have to do some things that are inconvenient. So here's a wonderful day. It's a Saturday. And my son needs baseball practice more than I need baseball practice. And I called up a string of people, and those string of people, they had stuff they had to get done. And that's just, their lives are busy. And I'll tell you what, I had nothing to do, but I knew where I was going to be. I was brought up to be a consistent member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know what I was in for. My life recently has not been a bowl of cherries. But the one thing that my sponsor told me is when the times get tough, the tough go to more meetings, and the tough make more commitments, especially when they're inconvenient, and that's just the way I was brought up. So if I would have skipped yesterday, something in my life maybe wouldn't have happened. And this is what happened yesterday. When I was about 60 days sober, it was right about when I was investigating my now sponsor. And I was a little bit crazy, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but I just feel like I need to share this. In my story, I suffered a blatant head trauma. And the doctors told me that I was never going to be quite right, that I might blank out, that my eye might sink in. There was a lot of stuff that you're going to suffer a lot of consequences. So for a long time, when I was coming in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was easy for me to differ, to be different than y'all. And, I have some of these things you're talking about, but, man, my case is definitely different here. And I heard a speaker at a day conference. It was inconvenient, and I went to it. And a gentleman spoke about how he had his head caved in, falling off a wall. And I'll tell you, I heard four wonderful speakers that day, but I'll tell you what, I connected with that and understood what he was sharing from the podium, that it didn't make him different. What it was just a coincidence of his active alcoholism, and then how God, through the steps in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, through good sponsorship, he came out the other side and he realized that he only had one problem here, and hence he only needed one solution, as the recovery that we find in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you what, that moment in time affected me. There was a lot of those. But I'll tell you what, I spent the next 12 years trying to figure out who that guy was. And I was like, and I never could figure out his name, couldn't find his disc. My sponsor couldn't remember who he was. And I always wanted to thank that guy. So I came to that event yesterday morning, and about halfway through his talk, it was just like there was a moment of clarity, Because that point that I heard him that first time, there was an effective change in my life. There was an effective change, and I needed it. And I'll tell you, where I'm at today in my life today, it doesn't seem like things are going my way at all. And I'll tell you what, I needed that to happen. And you can't get that by sitting at home praying to the lint that's in your belly button. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't have missed that for the world. And I went up and I talked to him afterwards. Of course, he's like looking at me like I'm crazy as I'm explaining all this to him, But I'll tell you what, it was like there was a new door opening and I needed that. Last night, for the first time in 6 months, I felt an awareness that I haven't felt in a long time. And I'll tell you what, I can't get that thinking about it. It's like everything that I get, every benefit I get in Alcoholics Anonymous is on the tail end of an action. And I'll tell you what, sometimes they have to be inconvenient. And I'm glad to be here today. Just got off the phone with my dad. My dad was diagnosed with lung cancer 4 weeks ago. And here's this guy, and I'm filling him in. We have a tight relationship today, thanks to the program outlined here. We've gone back and made amends, and we are tight today. And, I just went up and visited him. Things are not good, and we know that. And here's this guy. He knows what I'm going through. And he sucks it up, and he doesn't want to talk about himself. He wants to know how I'm doing. And he displayed the courage that I only wish I could possess. And I'm telling you what, I was proud of my dad when I got off the phone today. And I'll tell you, it wasn't always like that. It was never like that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. For a long time, long before I took my first drink of alcohol, I was a victim of circumstance. I was an angry kid. I was one of those kids who liked to go up and punch cinder block walls because I didn't know how to deal with life. When I felt frustrated, I would just shut down. I had nobody else out there, and I never felt connected to another soul. You know, and I'd watch TV. TV was my solitude, even as a little kid. Shows like Hogan's Heroes and Leave it to Beaver and all those, like, daytime sitcoms. And I'd watch Leave it to Beaver, and I'd look at this beautiful household. And I'd be like, and I can remember it like yesterday. Why do I not have this house? You know, we live in a trailer park. We're barely making ends meet. You know, Dad's never around. And, you know, and Mom is Mom. And I'll tell you what, maybe, long before I took a drink, maybe, just maybe, if my parents would straighten up, my parents would be around like they were on Leave it to Beaver, maybe I wouldn't feel like I'm this messed up inside. Because, I mean, I was always that kid. I'm like 8 years old, man. I have my Fisher-Price barn, you know, and I'm putting my tidy whities in there, and I'm like, I'm running away, you know. And they'd be like, oh, no, don't run away. Like, after the fourth time, they're like, well, that's the door. And, I mean, and I was like, okay, you know, and that's what I always wanted to do, was run away from my problems. I wanted to run away from them. I mean, I was a victim, you know. And I'll tell you what, all my problems always ended up being blamed on them. And that's just the way I grew up. You know, and if I look back on it, I mean, I've seen so many shrinks and psychiatrists since that point. And they all jump on that. They're like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. You know what, maybe if Dad was around, maybe you would have the skill set that you need to be successful in life. You know, I heard all that stuff. I actually had one shrink pin it down to, there was this one point in time I wanted a Darth Vader Pez dispenser, and my dad wouldn't get it for me. And he's like, that was the pivot point of your life. And I was like, yes, it was the pivot point in my life. At 5 years sober, all my sponsees put a Darth Vader Pez dispenser on my cake, you know. And I couldn't use that one no more, you know. I was kind of bummed out, you know. Got a lot of mileage out of that. And thank God Alcoholics Anonymous shows us that we take responsibility. You know, we're here to clean up our side of the street, and we have to disregard, you know, those people entirely. And through the process, I've had a full perception change about my parents. You know, Mom may have been in the hospital for a long time in the wards. You know, Dad may not have been around, but today I know through the amends, and most importantly, the actions that I take after the amends, I'll tell you what, I've had a perception change that these people did the best job they could, and it is an intellect. I know it in my heart of hearts that they did the best job they could, you know, with the product that they had, you know, which, you know, I kind of look perfect, but I'm really not, you know. So anyways, I'm growing up, you know, and yeah, I mean, and, you know, I was full-blown. I was always around alcoholism, you know, or at least some of it I perceived to be alcoholism. You know, I got to watch 3 out of 4 of my grandparents die in front of me, and that was a tough sight. You know, so growing up, you know, and being in the trailer park, I mean, there was always, like, kind of wacky stuff going on, like people taking the caddy, you know, and running into the blue trailer down to the end of the row and stuff like that, you know, and I was like, oh, my God, I don't want any part of none of this stuff, you know. And I just didn't even want to be there. I didn't like the lifestyle at that age. It just wasn't my cup of tea. And, you know, my dad was one of those guys who looked like an alcoholic, you know. I soon found him in the big book whenever I actually read it with a sponsor, and I was able to decipher what all this stuff meant. And I found my dad, and he was just a heavy drinker. But, you know, I mean, I'm looking back on it, and he did look like one of us. He's one of those guys who, you know, I remember having to call Mom to come pick us up because he had one beer too many. And him and Mom would fight, and he'd go put the plug in the jug, you know, but sooner or later he would return. But after he had his first after his first granddaughter was born, and they found a spot on his liver, he stopped. He had the DTEs for about a week, but he stopped. And then he remained happy and sober for the rest of, up to date, you know, didn't go to shrinks. Didn't go to church, didn't go to AA, hasn't done nothing except he just stopped. Now he's happy and sober. And I'll tell you what, for a long time, whenever I'm, you know, getting in and out of trouble, underage drinking fines and whatnot, you know, and as my progressive illness started to pile up consequences, I always looked at that. And I was like, you know what, if it ever gets that bad, I should be able to put the plug in the jug and I can stop just like my old man. You know, never really fully realizing that I'm bodily and mentally different than him. So I'm growing up, and all I can think about, you know, is baseball, you know, girls here and there, but really there wasn't anything going on. So I watched my grandparents die. My mom is a great person. She, you know, I got to see what a true alcoholic was, and that was my grandfather. When I was growing up, long before, you know, I felt the effect of alcohol, my mom's idea of how to control and enjoy my grandfather's drinking was to have me go along with him on his, on his weekend, you know, he would get down to the honky-tonk at, like, noon and stay till 6. So, bright idea, if Merv goes along, he won't tie one on. And I'll tell you what, I remember going to these, they don't have them here, you know. I mean, I haven't seen a lounge in a long time, you know. But I'm talking like there is no glass. I mean, there's no windows. It is pitch dark, and we're in here at noon. I'm like walking in. I'm like, whoa, what's up? You know, and we weren't even the first ones there. You know, I mean, there'd be like people around. You know, and everybody's like looking down, and they'd look up, and you get like the grunt. You know, and something wacky would happen. I remember witnessing the effect of alcohol on an alcoholic of my class and my type. Long before I took a drink. And what would happen was it used to amaze me because every weekend I'd get to see it over and over again, was somewhere between 3 or 4 these decrepit people, Joanne C., who would shake so bad she'd have to hold her arm to get it up to her lips. All of a sudden they would loosen up. Somebody crack a joke. Somebody put a quarter in a jukebox, and all of a sudden the place would come alive. And I'm like, this is crazy, you know. I'm like, oh, my God, if I remember, like, one of these people, they, you know, somebody shoot me. I mean, they were, like, letting me sit at the bar, and it was kind of fun, you know. I got to play pool with all these people, you know, and I was, like, the adopted grandson of the lounge guys, you know. And so, I mean, it was what it was, you know. And, and I toyed with drinking. I got real drunk one time at my sister's graduation party, and I threw up and passed out and all that type of stuff. But really the first effect of alcohol that lit me up was I had these three older sisters, and two of them came home from college, and the other one visited from where she was living, and they wanted to go out. And it was back in the 80s, so everybody had the big hair, you know, and, you know, like Flock of Seagulls was rolling, you know, and they were like, hey, we want to go see this DJ, you know, because he has all the up-to-date music. And I'm like, oh, boy, you know, and I was about 15 years old. And they were like, you know, we want you to come along. And I'm like, man, I don't want to come along, you know, but I went. And at that point in time, I'm overweight. I'm way obese. And we're still, like, in a poor part of town. I have no friends. I don't want to be a part of anybody. I am right here. You know, I used to be the class clown so I could engage with somebody on some level. But really, what was going on up here, nobody knew what was going on up there. And my life was all about, you know, presenting some kind of image. But I was going to keep everybody right here because I didn't want nobody to know what was going on inside me, which were thoughts of taking my own life, running away, you know, just a haywire stuff. And I'm this friendless guy. And I walk in there, and they order their drinks, and the bartender comes down to me, and they're like, what would you like? And I'll tell you what, without batting an eye, you know, I said, I'll take a double Jim Beam and Coke. And I'll tell you what, we all felt it. Man, when I drank that, I'm going to tell you what, it didn't even take the second one. And, I mean, I felt alive, maybe for the first time. I mean, I remember really laughing, like what felt like my first gut-buster real-life laugh ever. I mean, and it came free. And all of a sudden, you know, I mean, all those people, the fear of what other people are thinking of me, which at that point and sometimes today still drives my life, you know, wasn't as scary. And I'll tell you what, I didn't become a daily drinker, but I'm going to tell you what, that became the forefront of my life because I needed some more of that. Because what that did was it treated what was truly wrong inside of me, which is alcoholism, you know, because alcohol is a treatment for alcoholism. You know, and that's just the way I see it. And I'll tell you what, I came alive, and what ended up happening by the time I was a senior in high school, I mean, I was president of my class, I dated the prom queen, you know, and I was like, you know, head of the baseball team, and I had a host of friends. You know, it didn't matter where I went, I was the guy bringing the keg. And I'll tell you what, that's what alcohol did for me. And I'll tell you, for a long time, you know, I'll tell you, I chased that illusion that could still do that for me. Because there was a point in time, like, where I wasn't drinking a blackout. There were times when I could drink 6 to 8, and I could shut it down, and I could go home successfully. But after 7 underage drinking fines, you can see that, it wasn't that often. And I'll tell you, you know, I mean, that's just the way it went. But I'll tell you, that feeling, man, I'll tell you what, I chased that till I was 33 years old because I kept thinking it was going to happen. And what I ended up doing with most of my life at that point, I'll tell you what, you know, it doesn't matter where you go, you're always there. And I was that guy. You know, I moved to New York, to Georgia, to New York, to Pennsylvania, to New York, you know, back down to Virginia, Pennsylvania, Virginia. I mean, I was just hopscotching everywhere. And basically after I failed out of college, you know, I knew alcohol played such an important part that I knew that bartending was going to be a cool thing to do, you know, and because, I mean, it was easy access. That was the deal, you know, and that's what I became. I became this kind of bartender. I always worked the CD nightclubs. And I'll tell you, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, I had a good time. And, you know, consequences were mounting up. You know, I'll save you, like, a lot of the gory details, you know, legal stuff. I mean, but the whole thing is like, that's all fine and dandy. You know, for me, you know, whenever I'm talking to a newcomer, you can tell me all about your drama, but I want to know, I want to hear about, you know, how you felt. And this is exactly what used to happen, would be, okay, I've just gotten a DUI, or I've just done this to her again. And I'll tell you, you know, I wake up, and I'll tell you what, I don't want nothing. I don't want nothing to drink, and I'll tell you, you know, because I just, you know, there was an act of physical violence, and I'm not proud of that. I need to change my life around. I get a glimmer of what my life is truly like, and I'm a loser, and I know it. And I can't stand myself because, I mean, I'm already looking at all the other stuff behind me, and it's chasing me, and I have nowhere to go. But I just can't do this no more. And I'll tell you, man, it's like clockwork, and I hear it all the time. You know, it's like by noon, you know, I mean, maybe it's not that big of a deal. And then by 5, maybe just one drink or two. I'll tell you what, I remember whenever I used to be able to shut it down at 8 or 9, and I'd be able to get home successfully, and this time I can do that. I mean, oh, my God. You know, I mean, and then all of a sudden I'm waking up the next day, and I'm like, man, what am I doing? Just like Bill Wilson pounding his fist on the bar, you know, and that stuff would continually happen. And I had this job, and it was in Charlottesville, and I just moved down here, and I was working at a bar called Ruby Tuesdays, and I was the bar manager. And I tell you, you know, I mean, I've done a lot of running. This time, man, I'm going to, you know, I got to do something to fly straight because I've lost a lot of stuff. I've been running all over the East Coast. And I'm sitting there, you know, and I'll tell you what, you know, I'm just basically working. And this girl comes in and she interviews for a job. And I'm looking at her and I'm like, wow, she's pretty cute. You know, it's her with a capital H is what it is, you know, and you know, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask her out. So, and of course, I'm flamboyant. I want everybody to think good of me. So I invite the whole bar staff in a restaurant. I take them all down to Smith Mountain Lake, and we get a house, and we get jet skis and boats and the whole nine yard. And, you know, and here's this, I mean, she plays in the symphony. She's in a law office. You know, she's just working part-time. I already know I don't measure up, you know. I don't want her to see what a loser I am. So right away, I mean, it's the first date, and I knew enough to get a bottle of Rolling Rock, drink half of it, and let it sit there. And that's just my beer. Meanwhile, while she's on the jet ski or she's on the water skis, man, I'm doing Jaeger like nobody's business because I'm scared to death that she's going to find out. I don't know how to act around people whenever I'm sober. Whenever I'm not drinking, I don't do so hot. I already realize all this stuff, so I need some of that stuff down. And I'll tell you what, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, what ended up happening was I was on my jet ski. There was a guy behind me. I fell off, and he railed me in the head. And, you know, story goes that either I died or I came really close to dying on a helicopter. I went to the hospital, and then 30 days later I come to. And there sitting beside the bed was the girl. And I'll tell you what, you know, we get these windows and glimpses of what's really going on, you know, and I had one right then and there. And I'll tell you what, I meant it with every fiber of my being. I looked at her and I didn't say, how are you doing? I looked at her and the first words that came out of my mouth was, I cannot drink anymore. I can't. And she was like, no, don't worry about it. She's just like, whenever you get out, we'll see what we can do about maybe getting you some help. You know, and I was like, all right. And then I just passed in and out of consciousness. And 2 days after I'm out of the hospital, I'm stealing liquor out of somebody's liquor cabinet. And I don't know why I'm doing it. I don't know why I'm doing it. I mean, I can look back now and I know why I'm doing it. Because my illness, you know, I mean, when we talk about the first step being power over alcohol, you know, I mean, it's easy peasy. You know, once I start drinking, I can't control the amount that I'm going to take, and I don't know what's coming down the pike. You know, I might be able to, with enough, like, external circumstances staring me down, or she's staring me down, I might be able to shut down at 6, but I'm going to tell you what, that's a horror show. You know, stopping at 6, man, whoa, man, you know, I'll tell you what, man, I'm chugging Listerine in the bathroom at that point, you know, and, the other part too is just like, I know that once I stop drinking, there's something going on. And I couldn't even make it 2 days out of the hospital. How that shows up is I already shared. All of a sudden, you know, it doesn't matter what consequence or what's shaking me up. All of a sudden, I get so agitated inside. I get depressed because I'm a victim, you know. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, I just can't take it no more. I just can't take it no more. And then I have to treat my alcoholism with a drink. And then, you know, all I want to do is just go on the golf course and feel human. It's been 2 months. I just want to go on the golf course, and I just need a little bit of this stuff so I can feel human for the first time in weeks. And then I have two. And then it's like, and then I'm punching a windshield out in West Virginia in a blackout again. Now, what's up? You know, that pretty woman, that girl, I did a number on her. And I'll tell you what, I used to think that, you know, that she kicked me out. That ain't the truth. She stuck with me for 8 years of active alcoholism, not knowing if I was coming home or not. And what I did over time was I had to make a choice of whether or not I was going to drink the way I wanted, or I was going to, or I was going to basically take my life. And that's what it boiled down to. And what I did incrementally over time was I edged her out. You know, I made her go away just long enough so I could drink the way I wanted. And I'll tell you, man, that was tough sledding. You ever try and control and enjoy your drinking or just not drinking? I mean, I don't know if you have that experience, but I sure do. For 6 years, I start coming to AA, and I know I have a drinking problem. I know that every time I get drunk, and I also know whenever I get drunk, man, crazy stuff happens. I disappear for days at a time. You know, funny side story to this is, man, there was one time I went on a week-long run. My parents, a tree fell on their trailer. They had nowhere to go, no money to do anything with. And I'll tell you what, I was like, I got to go save the family. And I wasn't going up there to save nobody. What I was doing was, it was instantaneous. This is it. This is my getaway. And I went straight to, I packed up, threw some clothes in. I got a cooler. I made it out of like one of those plastic things, Rubbermaid things. And I mean, it was big. And I put like two bags of ice in there and filled it with beer and then topped it with ice. And I mean, I couldn't even get out of the state of Pennsylvania or the state of Virginia without a DUI. And that's the whole reason I went up, you know. But I kept on going because I'm alcoholic, right? You know, and so I get out of the drunk tank, and then I'm just like, all right, I better get up there because I sure don't want to go home. Plus, I got some more drinking to do. I go up there, and I get another DUI. No help to my parents. No help to my family because they're the reason I am like I am. I tried my best, you know. I mean, I put my arm around my dad and told him everything was going to be okay. I'll see you tonight. That's the kind of son I always showed up at, you know. I generally rolled into Pennsylvania to visit him with a fistful of acid, you know, and, which doesn't make for a pleasant Easter, by the way. And, you know, so at the end of the day, you know, to bring it back around is, you know, what always ends up happening whenever I'm just not drinking is I generally get worse. I never get better. And what would happen would be, the other funny thing is, whenever I came back from that trip, man, I rolled up and I didn't know what was going on. There was a hearse parked in my driveway, and I rolled up and I just remembered this. There was a hearse in my driveway, and I pulled up and I walked right up to the driver of the hearse and I asked point blank if he was here for me. You know, I did, and he's just like, "No, we're at the wrong address," and I'm just like, "That's awesome, thanks," you know, and man, I'll tell you what. That was like one of those things that like you come to like 12 years later, you're like, oh my God, I remember that, man, you know, and that's what driving to Buckingham will do for you. And so I edged her out, and basically what happened was the day, you know, I was just looking for a reason because I wasn't drinking, and I was coming to AA, and I was trying to pretend like I was part of it. I had a sponsor, but I wasn't doing anything I was saying. My case was different. I mean, I was the shrinks told me I was an alcoholic and an addict and a sex addict and a marijuana addict. I had like so many ands after my name, you know, and I came in here and I'm like, yeah, you guys are all nice and stuff, you know, and, but I'm just not quite like you guys. I have all this other stuff, you know, and, what happened was, is I'm just not drinking. I'm just trying to get it together. She's threatening to leave. And I'm like, man, I need to drink. And I was just in that place because I loved her. You know, I loved her a lot. And I was sick of hurting everybody. But every time I stopped drinking, all of a sudden I can't look at myself in the mirror no more because all that past is sneaking up behind me. And what essentially happened was my childhood hero, Willie Sargell, died. And my back was out. So I got the fistful of medication, got it all down, went down, got a six-pack of cider ale or something like that and drank that down. Went to a bar. I needed some more courage to take my own life. I went out and I bought the handheld tape recorder. And, I mean, I'm spewing stuff out. And I get up to the top of the mountain up here on 33, and I black out. And I come to, and I'm in a padded – or I'm actually in the holding cell. And they're like, sir, you know, you're in a lot of trouble, you know. And I'm, like, kicking the bars. I lost it. I mean, I've already been in padded cells before. I know what's coming, but this time it was different. I was way upset that I was still in the face of the planet. I just couldn't believe I was still here. And they said, Mr. Lingle, you're lucky to be here. You hit that guardrail head on at 55 miles an hour, and you bounced straight back. And you're lucky to be here. And I, you know, and it's funny because the guy who found me, I later found him in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and he told me the story. And what ended up happening, I got locked up. She's gone. And, you know, I had to take it seriously. I think I went into an outpatient treatment center and got a lot of useful knowledge. What they did for me was they tried their best to get me tied into AA. And essentially, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm still hanging out here, and I got the judgment machine rolling, and my life's like burning to the ground, you know, but it's just like I still hate everybody, you know, because I know I'm not doing what they're doing. So if I'm not doing what you're doing, and then all for me as an untreated alcoholic, I just pretty much hate you, you know. I mean, I had a target on everybody. That's the way it was, you know, because, I mean, I just didn't felt like I measured up. And I think I knew in my heart I just wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And, you know, like I said, there was a person like that. And it was like, it was about a week before I got sober. I heard this person share from the podium. And maybe, you know, maybe I had enough armor chiseled off of me. And, you know, maybe I was open to listening maybe for a little bit. But I wasn't done drinking yet. But I heard him say, you know, you never have to drink again if you do certain things. And that's what I heard. You know, that's not what they said. They later told me, you made that up. I never said that. And I was like, well, that's what I heard, you know, and that's what I heard. And I'll tell you, you know, I mean, I went back out and I got out of jail 2 times in 3 days, drunk in public. I'll definitely spare you the details of how I showed up in jail. And whenever I got out, you know, I'll tell you what, I had nowhere else to go. I mean, you know, I wish I could bedazzle it more than that, but at the bare essence of it all, I had nowhere else to go. And I was out of answers because I tried to treat my alcoholism with a picket fence and a trophy wife and, you know, an early retirement account. I tried to treat it with all that stuff, you know, and just not drinking, and it didn't make it any better, you know. And I knew I was out of answers because I knew that I tried everything I could. And so I called that person up that I hated the most in AA. And I'll tell you, I'll never forget that day. You know, I mean, it was fuzzy. They said, look, you got to get to a meeting, you got to get a white chip, I'm going to come down and get you. And I soon later, after the fact, I found out that they had plans to leave them for vacation right then and there whenever I called. And what they did was they self-sacrificed their time. They not only canceled, no, they were supposed to go to an AA conference and then have vacation afterwards. And what they did was they stopped their life and they took me in their home. And what they did was they started talking about alcoholism, you know, and I'm like, yeah, yeah. I know once I start drinking, I get drunk. I know all that stuff because I've been hung around here long enough to hear it all. But they just followed working with others right out of the book. They started talking about how they felt, and they, too, suffer from untreated alcoholism. They talked about the depression, the fear, and the anger, and that spring that winds in your gut until you've got to almost either take your life or have a drink. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's what I got. They're like, maybe you're a solution drinker here. Drink is not your problem. You know, sobriety is your problem. And they're like, you can't stand how bad you feel not drinking, that you're doomed to drink again, even though you've just burned your life to the ground. It doesn't matter what consequence you have or what you got lingering over you or whatever cookie you're chasing, it won't. There's a place and time where that none of that will matter, and you're going to have a strange mental blank spot, and you're going to get drunk. And I was like, that's what I got. So for some reason or another, you know, I was at the right place at the right time when somebody was armed with facts about their drinking. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I conceded to my inner myself that if I'm just like this person, maybe if I do what they do, I might get what they have. And what they had, most importantly for me, were two things. A, they were happy and sober, which I never could get my hand around at all. And the other one is that they seemed like they were serving something bigger than themselves, which I always wanted. I always wanted to be part of something that was serving something. And that was it, you know. I mean, long and short of it is, you know, how do you know you've done the first step? You watch your feet. And my feet started walking. They started telling me stuff like, you need to get committee meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous, and some of those got to be inconvenient for you. You know, if you say you're going to show up, you better show up, and you better show up on time. You know, we're going to do the steps, and you don't have to be perfect about it, but what you got to do is you got to give it your best shot you can. And they said, Merv, we're going to make you a promise here. And the promise is this, is whatever horror show of a life you walk in here with, it will be your greatest asset. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I was so depleted of soul at that point. I believed them, and that's just the way it was. And, you know, this is not podium flash. But I'm going to tell you what, everything I walked in here with on that first inventory, all those secrets that I never wanted to share for those 6 years that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll tell you what, you know, all that stuff has come back around. All that stuff has been uncovered. And I'll tell you what, it hasn't been discarded. It's been turned into a useful asset. Now, I think that's the great thing. You know, we have to, like, take the steps in order to clear a way to be consciously connected with our higher power. But the strange thing is that it isn't stuff that we discard. It's almost like it's a spiritual recycling center, you know. And that's what that stuff turned into me. You know, and, I mean, for a long time, you know, I mean, coming in and out, you know, I mean, the fourth step never wasn't the problem. It was the fifth step and the ninth step. Because I'm going to tell you what, I mean, that stuff that haunted me, I mean, it wasn't the worst one ever, but it wasn't the best one ever. But it was mine, and I've been focusing on it with my own, like, self-focused mind, because all I can think about is me and my problems that, you know, they get so glaring that I was, like, petrified. But I'll tell you what, you know, my feet walked. And, you know, and there were plenty of times when I wasn't going to share all that stuff. I mean, there were plenty of times, like, where I'm just like, okay, I'm going to put down prom night. You know, I'll tell them about prom night. But I'm not going to tell them about the money. You know, I'm not going to tell them about, you know, how my mom fell down the stairs and I laughed at her. Because those are the things. I'm not going to, you know, the one thing that haunted me the worst was I ran over my cat in a blackout and I buried him. That one haunted me worse than everything, and I can't understand why that's the one that haunted me. But, you know, maybe I might share that. And I'll tell you, you know, I think for God to interact in my life, I need people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need people like-minded just like me. Because I think that that's the conduit that I get access to that power through other members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, there was a point in time I wasn't sure I was going to share all that stuff, drunk or not. And I'm at a meeting, and they're having a big old, you know, it's a big old noon meeting in Charlottesville. There's like 80 people there, you know, and this guy raises his hand. He's like, hey, you know, I need somebody to go on a 12-step call with me after the meeting. And, you know, and I'm down there, you know, and I'm cleaning up my coffee pot 30 days sober, you know, because coffee makers make it, you know. Got my coffee. Basically, I was sponsorable, you know. I mean, they told me to get a coffee commitment, so I got one, you know. And that guy's just like, hey. He's like, none of these people can make it. You got to come. And I'm like, dude, I'm like 30 days sober. I have nothing to say here, you know. And he's like, I got to come. You got to bring another person, you know. So I'm like, all right, I'll go. And at this point, you know, 30 days sober, I have nothing. There's no money. Your retirement account's gone. Trophy wife's gone. I'm like, and it's all coming back. You know, it's all starting to filter in, like, the mound of, like, crap that I'm in at this point. And I'm just like, oh, man. And I went up there with him, and there's a guy dying on the bed, just like both my granddads and my grandma. And, you know, and he's sharing, you know, and he'd look at me, and I'd be like, AA works, you know, and that's about all I had, you know. But, you know, and this guy, remarkably, you know, God's a tricky guy or woman, and that guy looked just like my dad. And something happened, because whenever I came down out of that elevator, I'll tell you what, it was a changing moment in my life, you know. And I decided, you know what, I do got to give it my best try, you know. And I don't know if it was a fear that I saw myself in that guy, or maybe it was just like, you know, one alcoholic talking to another in whatever capacity or service level it could be. But I got enough relief from the bondage itself that I knew that there was something I needed to do here, you know. And there was all these other things that went on, too, like I shared about the conference and all these things. But I'll tell you, you know, I mean, you know, for me at that point, I mean, I'm like, you know, practice meditation. So I'm like, you know, sitting in a room by myself for 45 minutes listening to Brian Eno, you know, like, you know, imagine the turtle to come in off the shore with the answer to my question on his back, you know, and I'm like, crazy, you know, like, I think that's meditation, you know, and it's like, how come this doesn't make me feel better, you know, and but I'll tell you what, every time that I've taken time out to sacrifice my time for an alcoholic, the benefit's always there, you know, and I came clean on the fifth step. I shared all that stuff, and something strange started to happen. The book tells me that's when we begin to have a spiritual experience, and for me, spiritual means self-sacrifice and giving. And, you know, and what ended up happening was I think I became more available not only to God, but to God's kids. And people started asking me, I'm at like 40 days sober. I'm like sponsoring a guy. And I'm like, man, I'm only 4 days sober. And they're like, as long as you're a page, head up in the big book, you can sponsor a guy, you know? And I'm like, all right, you know, I'm like, come on, Bill, you know, and, let's meet at the house on Tuesday and Thursday, you know, and I'll tell you what, man, I mean, I was crazy though, you know, that guy saved my life. You know, I'll tell you what, you know, I mean, you know, it was like shortly into sobriety, I got a new girlfriend, you know, boy meets girl on AA campus, and, you know, she, you know, tells me she's pregnant, you know, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on, and, you know, and, man, crazy again, but I'll tell you what, as squirrely as I was, man, that guy showed up at my house on Tuesday and Thursday nights, and I'll tell you what, thank God that he did, thank God he did. You know, and, you know, at this point, I'm, you know, wrangling in the new sponsor. And, man, he had a field day with me, you know. And I remember my first meeting with my sponsor, and most of you guys know who he is. And he's sitting there, and this is back before his spiritual days, you know. And, oh, my God, don't give me a copy of this. But I remember I rolled up in this meeting, man, I'm hot stuff. I got a sponsee at, like, you know, 90 days sober. Another one's, like, call me up. I'm like, man, I'm hot, you know, I'm hot, you know. And I'm like all egoed out. I don't even know if I had ego deflation the first time around or not. But I come in there with like a white beater T-shirt, a pair of camo shorts, flip-flops. My tats are all hanging out because I'm cool. And, you know, and I'm sitting there and, you know, I get up and get coffee like while his wife shares. And then I share. I introduce myself as an alcoholic and an addict. I drop like four-letter bombs all over the place because I'm an important guy. You got to be important here. And, man, and it was like multiple other offenses. And this guy gets me up after the meeting. He's like, look. He's like, you know, if you want me to sponsor you, you know, this has got to change. First off, you know, you might be a loser, but you don't have to dress like one. And, you know, he's like, and two, you know, we're in a church, you know, and you may not respect that, but what happens if the minister's in the next room and he hears you sharing like that? What kind of image do you think you're going to project for Alcoholics Anonymous tonight? You know, I mean, he read me the riot act, you know, and I'll tell you what, you know, I mean, but I'll tell you, he got my attention, and I think I was still sick enough, and I knew that I, you know, I needed a sponsor that I said yes, and, you know, saying yes to Alcoholics and to my sponsor, you know, soon to be, you know, was the most spiritual thing I could say ever, you know, even more so than God, you know, in my book, saying yes to Alcoholics Anonymous and saying yes to a sponsor. If I had that attitude, everything's going to work out okay, and I know that today. You know, and, you know, so I went along, you know, and I'll tell you, you know, the amends were creeping up, and I'll tell you, man, then, you know, there was some stuff that I didn't want to face. You know, it was like my first Christmas in sobriety, you know, and I'm like, you know, I got my list, you know, I got my list, and I'm like, I'm going to go home, and I'm going to pay back for all the porn, and, you know, and all this stuff that I've stolen. He's like, hold on there, Tiger, hold on. He's just like, man, who have you hurt the most? And you're going home? And you're going to prioritize a $5 porn mag over your mom and dad and your sisters. He's like, why don't you go home and you take care of the wreckage around your house? And I was like, and those, I'll tell you, you know, I didn't want to pay the money back, and I'll get to that one in a minute, but I'll tell you, I didn't want to face mom and dad. I didn't want to face my sisters. But I went and I did it, you know. And of course, my sisters, my mom, you know, I went back, or my sisters and my dad, I went back, and they were a little uncomfortable, so I knew not to, you know, follow through with it with hardcore details, just do it in a more general way. And, you know, and I asked all the right questions, you know, how else may have I hurt you? And I learned how to shut up, you know, and let them tell me. And they were just like, ah, Merv, just, you know, go stop drinking. You know, or just, you know, stay stop drinking and do what you're doing, you know. And that's the answer I got. And then I'll tell you what, about 2 hours before I split, I knew I had to do mom. I mean, mom, I'll tell you, tough sledding, you know, because dad was always away. So dad never got the brunt of my anger. You know, he never did. And I'll tell you, whenever I was talking, telling you about being a victim, you know, and, you know, if she would have been a better mom, you know, I mean, I'll tell you what, man, I played that out. I played that hand all the time with her. I mean, for years I told her that she, you know, if she would have been a better mom, I might have turned out all right. And I told it to her repeatedly for years. Showing up, like I said, with a fistful of acid, that's how I show up at home, you know. And then whenever I come home, I make promises that my butt never cashes. And I'll tell you what, lousy Sun City, man, lousy. And you know, the immense process, man, I mean, I love the cookie, the 10-step promise, you know, the problem will be removed. I love that stuff. You know, and I do believe that this program is meant for us to be, you know, successful, be sober, happy, and successful. You know, get a connection with God and then carry this message. But sometimes I wonder if God just didn't play a big old trick on us and save the world from us, you know. And what happened was, is I do believe that the amends process is a healing on both sides of the street gig. And I'll tell you what happened that day. It opened my eyes to what the amends process is truly all about. Because when I went back, you know, and I told her, I said, you know, Mom, I said, man, I've been a lousy son, you know, XXX, I haven't shown up and all this stuff. And she's just like, oh, no, Mervy, if I would have been a better mom. I said, Mom, you need to shut that up right now. I said, that's not the way it was. I said, you did the best job you could with what you had. I said, I was the one that implanted that in your brain. You don't need to believe that no more. And I tell you what, man, it wasn't right away, but, I mean, it flowed out of her. For years she believed my own delusional thinking as her own. And now she's free of that today. Is my sobriety a gift? You bet. Is that a gift? You bet. So it's just not all about us. It isn't. You know, and I know that from my own experience. You know, well, I need to say something funny now. I need to cheer myself up. Oh, my God. And then, so, I mean, it was successful. And, you know, I have great sponsorship, and I have great leaders in Alcoholics Anonymous, and those guys, like, and you know who you are out there, you know, the people in my first home group down in Buckingham, and showed me what principles meant, but not by giving me the definition, but showing me with their actions. And I'll tell you what, because I don't get reading about it. I get by watching, and I also get by running my character defects in the ground until I need to change. And what I did was they were like, okay. I was like, I did my amends. And they're like, no, you didn't. You just planted the seed. What did they want you to do? Well, they, you know, call every week and, you know, show up. And, well, that's the amends. You know, just the approach of making your amends is just a seed. And what you need to do is follow that up with continuous actions. That's the true amends. And what's going to happen, Merv, is if you do that long enough, that's who you'll become, and it won't be an amends anymore. And that's what I did. You know, I let my mom and dad be parents to me today. You know, I don't dictate their behavior. You know, and I show up, and the cards go in the mail, and I'm connected with them today, you know, and I mean, recently, like, you know, I'm the court guy now. I got to represent the family, you know, when all this stuff is going to come to a head, you know. And this is the guy who used to show up with a fistful of ass and say, I'll see you at 11, you know. That's the power of God through Alcoholics Anonymous today in my life. So I'm a fast starter. I'm a lousy finisher. I'm 5 years sober. And I'll tell you what, I'm sponsored a bunch of guys at this point. Not a bunch, but, you know, for me it seemed like a bunch. You know, oh, my God, man, call me up with her, like, flat tire stories. I'm like, oh, my God, come on. You know, and I'll tell you what, but I'll take those all day long now. I'll take those all day long. But I'll tell you what, the tough thing was is there was one left. There was, well, two left. But the big one was is the IRS. Man. I'll tell you what, in 88, I got a tax return for $1,495. And I told my mom to forge my signature, go ahead and cash it, get whatever money she needed to fix her car, and then I'll come down from New York and pick up the cash. You know, and come down, and I was like, oh, this cash, well, what's this? And she's like, $1,395. I was like, whoa, you know. And I was like, you know, oh, I should call the IRS. And I was like, but the old 71 scamp needs some new tires, you know. And I didn't say anything about it. But I'll tell you what, for years, man, I'm waiting for the IRS cops to come and send me to the camp. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, looking around my short tax time. Oh, my God, you know. Tensing up. I'm going to get audited. I'm going to jail, you know. And I'll tell you what, I didn't want to call the IRS. And here I am. I'm sponsoring all these guys. And I'm like reading in the book, you know, there it is, you know, we may drink again unless we, you know, lose our fear to face our creditors. And I'm reading, I read it with two guys in the same week. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, I mean, the first step, I'll tell you what, man, that's definitely the engine here, you know. But I'll tell you what, the caboose here, which sometimes, you know, you need more than the engine, is the primary purpose. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad I worked with those guys because I'm sitting on this stuff and I, you know, my sponsor knows I'm not paying it and he's just laughs. He's just like, you'll pay it when you're ready and it's coming. And, I'll tell you what, there was, I just pulled in the old Burger King, you know, I pulled in the Burger King and I'm like, and I'm losing it. And all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. So I get my two double cheeseburgers and I park the car and I call the IRS and, you know, I don't know how long it was. We'll just say like an hour and a half to 2 hours later. I'm talking to my fourth person, and this person's like, Mr. Lingle, what you got was a tax credit in 1988. You got paid the correct amount. You do not owe us anything, so please stop calling us. And I'm like, and at this point, I'm mad because I want to pay back this $1,000, you know. And I'm like, man, that was going to be the best share ever, you know. And you know, so, man, I didn't owe nobody nothing. I was like, man, how long did that take? You know, Sandy B. always talks about how we can go back and rewrite our past, you know, through perception change, and it always takes the actions. And, you know, I mean, in a way, I mean, it was kind of funny, you know, like how that showed up. You know, it was like, wow, you know. I mean, how long was I running from my own mind here, you know, and, to have some truth be brought down upon us, you know, simply by picking up a phone and making a call, you know, oh, my God. So, you know, the rest of the steps, you know, are just action steps for me. They're daily action steps. And it's kind of weird. Like, I used to be like, okay, I'm doing 10 and 11 and 12, and today they're more of a big ball of wax. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm still imperfect. I still have character defects. And I'll tell you what, I still get very self-focused. And but I'll tell you, you know, the thing that still remains constant in my life today is basically consistency and meanings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you, I need to have that consistency because especially for, like, you know, inconvenient, you know, commitments. And why do I need inconvenient commitments? And why did I need to make that last financial amount? Well, basically, there was a, you know, I was working for the most money I've ever made. I was a district manager for a local ice cream company. And the day Obama got elected, they let half of their district managers go. And here I am, new, kind of like an infant son, girlfriend who cannot work at this point, and I'm like jobless. And I'm like flipping out. And I'll tell you what, thank God I made that amends, you know? Thank God I made it. And I mean, I'm losing my mind. And, you know, I called my sponsor first, and then I called the girlfriend and tell her what's up. And I'll tell you, you know, I mean, it was just an amazing thing. I went home that night, and it was just like I was crazy, you know, and Randy at that point said, Merv, there's a plan here. And, you know, and I had to return a phone call, and I returned that phone call, you know, and all of a sudden after that phone call, there was just like a calmness like I've never had. Like I knew everything was going to be okay. And I'll tell you, the next day, I had three job offers the first day of unemployment. And I took the one for minimum wage. And I don't know why I did it. You know, I have no idea why I took that job. And today I manage one of those stores, you know, and now I make the most money I've ever made, you know. But really it's, you know, and it's just kind of weird like how that stuff happens, like the changes will happen. You know, but, you know, man, I was crazy. I mean, I still can get crazy in sobriety. You know, but I'll tell you, you know, along with consistency in meetings, you know, the other one is like, you know, and what am I doing in, you know, as far as carrying the message to people that may not have a chance to hear it. And I have a jail commitment on Monday nights. And I'll tell you what, that jail commitment, I took that jail commitment 1 month before I lost my job. And I could hear my sponsor's voice ringing in my ears. Because every time I have a problem, he tells me, he's like, why don't you go tell those inmates all about your problems? You know, and I would go in there, you know, it's just like going up to see that sick guy, you know, I go in there and I'd be thinking about me and I always come out, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm grateful for God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm glad that I showed up here today even though I didn't want to be, you know, and the strange thing is here it is, jail commitment's back, jail commitment comes 8 months ago, and I have this jail commitment, and now all of a sudden there's a series of events that I'll save you the gory details, but that has changed my life. You know, basically personal relationship split. Fear of what my son thinks of me just driving me crazy daily. You know, there was a point in time where Starbucks was thinking about shutting down a store. You know, soon dad with cancer, car dies. It's country western Song City here. And I'll tell you what, you know, and I'm rolling in Monday night, and I can hear my sponsor's voice, why don't you tell those inmates all about your problems? You know, and I know better than that. And I go in there, and I just try and share my experience, strength, and hope, and I'm just like holding on for dear life in Alcoholics Anonymous, just holding on. And I'll tell you what, whenever I come out, I'll tell you what, I feel a little bit more of the Spirit flowing through me. A little bit more, I know everything's going to be okay. And I'll tell you what, that's the magic that we need here. I need to be inconvenienced by Alcoholics Anonymous because I have this problem. And the problem centers in my mind, and the problem is, or the problem really is that I get so focused on myself that sometimes I still can make up my own stories and believe them. Yeah, I need a constant perception change of what my reality is because left untreated, it's never good. It's never good. It's always bad. And I'll tell you, you know, I mean, that's, you know, and it's just the way my life goes. And I'll finish with a story. And the story is this, and this is why I need to work with other guys consistently. And that doesn't mean I sponsor them. What that means is I be available for them. I get to meetings early and I stay late. If somebody needs a ride, yeah, I'm your guy. You know, and I need all of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a point in time like where it was fall time, and we're living in Earliesville. And I'll tell you, you know, all the trees in the yard are like this ugly yellow brown. And I'm like looking around like, man, all these trees are ugly. I'm like looking over there, man, they got like red maples, and it's all beautiful over there. Why isn't it beautiful right here, you know? And I get this idea, and I don't tell it to nobody. I go out and I get this chainsaw, you know, I got a chainsaw. I'm not telling sponsors I got a chainsaw, you know, and big can of two-stroke, man, got that thing going on too. And I had this plan because at this point in time, my son is doing a day program where a parent has to be in a local school system. So we go there, and I already know it, man, I'm going to like, put in Dark Star, you know, put in some Grateful Dead, take the long way home, get them to pass out, get them tucked in. And these trees are coming down. They're coming down because, you know, I want to put in some light, fluffy, beautiful trees. So, I mean, the plan, you know, comes off without a hitch, man. We're like, you know, on this back road and he passes out and I'm like, sweet. And I'm like looking at everything. And I'm like looking at the mountains. I mean, it looks like God's watercolors, you know. I'm like, oh, man, this is just so awesome, you know, like, and I'm like, man, you know, and then I'm like, I'm going to sell those trees now. It's coming, you know, and the thing is, like, I'm taking these turns, and I look over the field, and there is what looks like a big bouquet of flowers in the middle of this field, and it's the most beautiful thing I see, and the closer I get to my house, I realize that that bouquet of flowers is my house. And, you know, and I'm going down the driveway, and I'm like, oh, man, you know, God's a tricky guy. Or later. And isn't that the truth in my life? When I'm in the middle of it, it's never good. And what I need to do is I need to take a different attitude, and that means a different approach. And that's what the steps in the fellowship do. And then what will happen is I might have to take the long way around, but if whenever I look at it from a different angle, it's always something beautiful. And that's why I need to be engaged here today with you people. I need to keep my commitments that are inconvenient for me. I need to show up at conferences, and I need to be available, and that means I return my phone calls, and I get there early, and I stay late. Most importantly, what it means for me today is that I need to be a part of something greater than myself, because by myself, I am nothing. Thanks for letting me share.